Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Northumberland County Council recently inked a deal to sell the Materials Recovery Facility, or MRF as it's also known, for an undisclosed amount. A major corporation, Mterra Environmental, is hoping to buy it. Mterra runs recycling operations across Canada and in the United States. Two county representatives, Adam McHugh, Associate Director of Operations for Public Works, and Jennifer Moore, the CAO, will tell us what this means for curbside pickup and the future of the plant. I'm so pleased to have with me today Adam McHugh, the Associate Director of Operations for Public Works, and Jennifer Moore, CAO of Northumberland County. Both of you, welcome to Consider This.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
Jennifer, most people in Northumberland County know the recycling program through the blue and gray boxes that we put out each week with our trash, along with our compost. But there are some who may not know what happens to it once it gets picked up and trucks drive it away.
Well, I can certainly give a high-level overview, and Adam can give us a lot more detail. He's much more familiar with the operation, but I think many of our residents know we do have the MRF, the Material Recovery Facility, that is in Grafton. We can all see it from the 401 when we drive by. So all of our material does make its way to that facility. That's in a nutshell what happens. Adam can certainly talk more about what happens within in the plant and how it operates.
So Adam, can you walk us just through what happens in?
Yes. So when it comes into the plant, the first thing we do is we tip it in two different areas on the tip floor, because we are now a two-stream recycling. So that truck, as it's coming in, the papers material are all kept in one side of the truck and all the containers material are on the other side. So we dump it in two different locations. The paper materials are actually very clean because we're using a two-stream material sort at curbside for residents. That paper material, we push that material onto a conveyor belt. It goes down to a baler and we bale that material. And we market it just as is. We do a visual inspection to make sure that nothing has gotten in there while it was going down the road, or people didn't set the wrong thing up in their gray box. But after a visual screening, if there's no contaminants, that goes right to bale. So very little input. On the container side, that material makes its way into the plant. The first thing we do is, again, look for contamination, and we pull that off in our pre-sort booth. Then it basically goes through a number of mechanisms. There's a trommel screen. It's a circular screen that basically has holes that are about 2 inches in diameter. Anything smaller than 2 inches falls out, and we sort that separately. That's mainly like our mixed broken glass. We have a magnet in place on the conveyor belt that pulls off all the metal cans. We then send the materials through to a PET optic sorter. So that is an optic sorter that is basically designed to capture without human hands any water bottles or anything made of PET plastic, and typically it's your water bottles and pop bottles that are made of PET. Then we have a number of staff that are sorting out the various other types of container materials, whether it's gable top like milk cartons and juice cartons, to margarine container, to laundry detergent containers. Those get sorted by hand, and then ultimately we then have an eddy current that kind of acts as a reverse magnet that then sorts the aluminum and ejects the aluminum off and gets the aluminum off. And then everything else that's left over is what we call our residual. And that's about 10% of the material that comes into the plant is our residual. It ends up being a waste material that goes to landfill. So right now we're capturing about 90% of the material that comes in from curbside is now basically being sent, baled, and then marketed on a monthly basis. So, and we do competitive bids on a monthly basis. So we allow a number of different vendors to bid on our materials and tell us how much they're willing to pay for our aluminum or our metal or our plastic bales, and we ship those out. And majority of those stay either in Ontario or North America.
Before I talk about the amount of money that it generates, I'm really interested though in how critical recycling is to the county's overall waste management strategy. How does this fit in, and how significant is it to overall what we're trying to do with our landfills and all the other aspects of waste management. Maybe Jennifer, you might want to start on that one this time.
Yeah, I will. The recycling program is very critical for waste diversion, and that's really something that is core to most of our programs. And whether it be the your blue gray bin, your green bin, your leaf and yard waste, all of those programs combined help to keep materials out of our landfill. And that really is the objective of all of these programs for diversion. Residents will notice if they go to our community recycling centers that we're introducing all the time, there are more and more programs. This year, there'll be a new mattress diversion program. All of those things are meant to keep materials out of our landfills. They're a precious space. Both from an environmental and a financial perspective, we want to make those landfills last as long as we possibly can. So diversion is critical, and recycling plays a big part of that.
Jennifer, what is the current cost of the facility?
That I'm going to defer a little bit to Adam. We know that when we see this transition, we'll save about $3 million a year annually. So that'll be the levy portion. But Adam, I think you probably have off the top of your head a little more detail on the numbers of the plant.
Yes. So overall, as Jennifer mentioned, like the overall net cost to the county is about $3 million a year. We're spending about $2.5 million a year collecting that material. We're seeing that the MRF operations, the net cost can vary significantly year to year too, just costing us a couple $100,000 a year too. Over $1 million a year, depending on how much revenue we generate from the sale of the recyclables that we capture at the MRF. And unfortunately, the revenue that we get for those commodity prices really fluctuates based on the market. So, you know, in one year, we may see that we get $400,000 worth of revenue when markets tank and we see getting next to nothing in the way of paper revenue. But then when we had a bumper year, 2 years ago, we saw revenues up were almost at $1.3, $1.4 million. So that can really impact the overall cost of the operations of the MRF. But typically, it's about a net cost of about $3 million a year to the county to operate the entire recycling program, from collection to promotion and education to managing the MRF itself, running the MRF and the staff there, as well as the cost to dispose of the residual waste associated with that operation too.
Adam, can we just talk a little bit more depth about this fluctuating of the market prices? Because the whole purpose of this, we've always understand. I mean, since people first started talking about recycling in the 70s, the idea was to create products that used recycled materials, and that there was always this thought that there was going to be this great market, because that was the whole cycle that was to be created through these programs. Can you explain to us why it is that there is such a weak market, for example, for paper? Why isn't every piece of paper that we ever touch recycled paper? Why aren't manufacturers taking back these plastics that they use and reusing them to generate straws or little knives when we go to Tim Hortons and get our butter knife? You know, like, why is that not happening? And why is the market so low and so poor?
Well, the markets really are driven by the economy. So we basically sell commodities. We sell aluminum, metals, plastics, and paper. So when we're selling these materials in bales, we're selling them into a marketplace, and whatever the market will bear is what we'll get. So when we were in COVID, we saw a lot of people were purchasing and getting home deliveries through Amazon, things like that. So the demand for paper really went up, because they needed lots of paper to make boxes to ship materials out. And so it went up. Same with metals. When we saw that there was, you know, when there's a boom and people are buying new cars, that the price of metal goes up and the price of aluminum goes up. When we see, you know, recessions hit, we see our commodity prices go down, because people aren't buying. So they don't need those virgin materials anymore. They don't need the metals and the aluminums and the plastics. So those go down. But some of the other things you touched on, Rob, were, you know, the plastics out there that we don't currently encourage residents to put in the blue box, because we don't have markets for them and they're not recyclable. Things like the plastic utensils we were talking earlier about, stand-up pouches where, you know, drinks are coming in what we call in our industry multi-laminate packaging, where you have a pouch that contains a juice, that's made from a couple different types of plastics, and then they also have melded onto that a thin layer of aluminum as well. So even though those materials are made of different products that could be recycled individually, we don't have markets for that. Nobody yet, as of yet, has the technology to break those materials apart. So even if we capture them, we don't have a market, so we can't sell those. So those types of materials just go to landfill. And that's why we don't encourage residents to put those materials into the recycling, because we know that we don't have a market for them.
What process did the county use to bring about the sale of the MRF?
Well, as you said, this is was triggered by some decisions by the province on how they were going to manage recycling province-wide. We had to wait to see when we were going to most likely be transitioned. We know that will be at the beginning of next year based on what's been communicated to us now. We then had to assess whether we wanted to continue to be in this market. And I think any municipality that operated a MRF, they went through that same process of looking at whether they wanted to compete. And really, when we did that evaluation, we determined that the best thing was for us to get out of this business and let it move to the private sector.
Who's going to be picking up our recycling and our waste once we get into this new system? Who would like to answer that one?
Yeah, certainly. So right now we are also working with Circuit Materials Ontario, because Circuit Materials Ontario would like to see municipalities, where possible, continue to administer collection contracts during the transition period. So the transition period that the province has put in place is between 2023 and 2026. So very likely the county will continue to administer a collection contract that we have right now with Miller Waste to ensure that recyclables get collected curbside throughout the province for the years 24 and 2025. 2026, we won't know yet, but that will be beyond the transition period. So as Jennifer mentioned, like, the province has said that there should be no material change to curbside collection. Residents should not see any change. So what you're allowed to put out in your blue and your gray box today will remain unchanged until 2026. Come 2026, the producers can look to standardize the collection list across the province. So right now, every municipality, does something a little different. So when you move to a new municipality, you're always wondering, what can I put in my blue and gray box? How does it go out? The idea with this transition is that will become streamlined throughout the province. Wherever you go in the province, you'll be allowed to put the same materials in your blue or gray box out for collection. So the idea is that come 2026, you'll actually probably see that there may be more materials that you'll be allowed to place out for collection come 2026. And it'll very likely be similar, but there definitely is the opportunity for producers to enhance the existing system and make changes to it. But there should be no noticeable change between now and the end of 2025 at a minimum.
But isn't one of the things that we always take pride in is that everything that's done local, we can excel at? Maybe we have a better collection, maybe we have a better recycling system. I know in Toronto, they don't pick up as many things as they pick up here in Northumberland. I mean, how is that going to really benefit us if we're going to be suddenly become part of this gargantuan region? That, are we still going to have a say, or are we still going to be heard as citizens to make sure that, our recycling is at a high level and they're pulling out 90% or more of recyclables so that our landfills aren't going to get filled up? I can hear listeners worrying about the fact that they, we might see a decline in service, or we're just, a little Northumberland County, and who cares about them and what they want to do? How do you address that?
I think that that's one of the main things that we have been tabling, and not just Northumberland, but I think all municipalities have been raising that concern, that they want to make sure that our programs maintain the levels that they're at or improve. We certainly have a vested interest. We talked at the beginning about the importance of diversion and keeping as many things out of our landfills as we possibly can, because they will continue to be operated by municipalities. So we want to make sure that those diversion rates are maintained, and we'll certainly continue to monitor and manage that. But from a process perspective, this is driven by the province and the new legislation driving back responsibility to producers. The hope is that As they take more ownership of the program, they will seek more ways to in their packaging, and they'll start to modify that so that they will then have a vested interest in reducing their own costs and what it takes to recycle. That is the hope of this new program, that will drive those changes through the system because they'll have that full responsibility now. But yes, there is certainly some risk with us being a smaller player now in making sure that we still see those diversion rates. We'll do our best to keep a voice at the table to make sure that what's in this new legislation gets enforced. It is certainly something we're monitoring, and it's been on our radar since this new legislation was tabled. But we hope that it will drive the intended consequences of reducing some of that packaging and creating more things that can be recycled if they're in packaging.
Well, I mean, when you look at MTERRA Environmental, the company that's purchased the MRF, it's a huge company. I mean, it operates in BC, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, all across Ontario. They even have a plant in Michigan in the US. So it sounds like a huge company. Now, as a small municipality in Eastern Ontario, are we going to get the same level of service and attention for residents in Joy? For example, I mean, if somebody calls in for a concern right now, are we going to get a call center in the future that's far away that doesn't even know where like Roseneath's located? I mean, how do you square that circle?
I think that goes back to some of the transition process, and hopefully having a transition period will allow some time for learning. But as we said earlier, we don't know what MTERRA will do for service. We're still waiting to hear what the awards are for each of those catchment areas that Adam mentioned. So we don't know who will be serving the county from that perspective at this point in time.
Well, okay, fair enough. But I mean, you know, when you check out MTERRA, I mean, they most recently in Victoria, just in the last couple of months in Victoria, BC, they lost its contract to GPL because they had pickup issues, and the company was blaming a lack of staff and the weather and other things. So, you know, again, that sense of control, that sense of things being local, it just surprises me, because Durham and London, they're not selling their facilities. They're going to keep them going. And I just wonder, you know, was there ever discussion about a partnership with Durham and having a service like from Durham and Northumberland? Was that ever part of the discussion?
We looked at a number of options before we brought this process forward. I think we need to certainly look at our size. I don't think that we did explore a partnership with Durham per se. Adam can maybe give us a little bit of background on some of those original options. They were taken to County Council, I guess it was 2020 when we originally made this decision from what we knew at that time of the process. And certainly we did look at what would be both from a service level and a cost perspective. We evaluated those options to see how we could serve the residents. And we did look at what most other municipalities of our size were doing and what service levels they were able to continue. I don't know if Adam, you want to add anything to that.
Well, certainly. So what we're talking about right now is the processing of recyclables. So that is something that as a municipality, we don't have the ability to make that decision if we want to stay in the game or not. Much like MTERRA is having to bid, Northumberland County would have had to make a bid to Circular Materials Ontario to see whether or not we could be competitive in that space to operate our MRF. And the signaling we're getting is basically that they're looking at more centralized, larger material recovery facilities to process the materials that get collected from curbside. Where residents will see most, if any, impact is curbside collection. And that's where Circular Materials Ontario have indicated and signaled that they would prefer to see municipalities continue to stay involved and administer the collection so that we're the ones that are still answering the phones and dealing with those calls from residents. So we're working with Circular Materials right now to see if we can come to mutually agreeable terms on continue to administer that collection contract with Miller Waste and possibly down the road with, if we were to tender it again when this contract expires. So where the material gets processed really doesn't have that much of an impact on residents. They're all going to basically wanting to capture as much material as possible so they have more materials to market. So they're going to want to be very efficient. it's the curbside section, I think, that is where we want to make sure that residents don't see a change in the province's signal that shouldn't happen. And if we continue on with Miller administering that contract, then you have the same contractor that's been in place since 2020 doing that high level of service, where residents can have some sort of, I guess, assurance is that under the new regulation that the province has passed, there are now targets that the producers need to meet. So for various types of materials that are marketed, they have to capture a certain percentage of those various types of materials on an annual basis and report back to the province. And if they're not meeting those targets, there are penalties in place. The old legislation never had targets or penalties in place. So it was just, you know, best efforts. Now it's basically there are penalties involved if you're not capturing materials, and there are successive increases. So as the years go on, the province is going to want to see higher and higher rates of capture of materials that have been marketed. So if you sold 1,000 water bottles, you've got to get 90% of those water bottles back, for example. But, you know, it might be 95% of those water bottles back in 2025 or 26 kind of thing as you go down the road. So it's nice to see that there are targets and penalties associated with this.
Need to keep in mind is that this is a business and there's risk involved with a business, and it'll be the taxpayers. If we stayed in this operation, the taxpayers would have been the ones continuing to absorb that risk. When we look at commodity prices and those sorts of things, that flows back to the taxpayer if we stayed in this competitive operation.
Jennifer, your press release says you'll be communicating with residents more as more information becomes available. What are some of the items still on the checklist to be done before the full transfer of our local system to producers?
I think a lot of that is really looking at what happens with the awards of the catchment areas. And then, of course, a lot of that will be working with staff once we have that information for that portion of the transition. We will continue to operate. So we need to continue to operate and maintain the facility through the end of the year. And then we will go through that transition process. So I think a lot of the heavy lifting has occurred at this point. And now it's just implementing what we have.
Adam, what do you see on the checklist?
Yeah, so for us right now, it's working with MTERA to basically satisfy the few conditions within the existing offer that we have right now in play. So MTERA is looking right now to come before Alma Haldeman Council at some point in the future to basically have the property rezoned so they can continue to operate that facility as a MRF. And they're just doing their due diligence checks right now with the county. So once we have those in place, we should have a finalized offer in place. Obviously, we've set the close date for January of 2024, just because until that time, the county is still legally obligated under the existing legislation to continue to offer the Blue Box program to our residents. So that's why we've chosen that date in January.
Adam McHugh, Jennifer Moore, thank you for talking to me today.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you very much.
That was Adam McHugh, Associate Director of Operations for Public Works, and Jennifer Moore, CAO of Northumberland County. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.